So fling golf is a variation of golf. We play on any golf course. We're just flinging the ball with one stick instead of hitting it with 14 clubs. On the surface, people are like, man, fling golf is just dumbing down golf. No, it's a totally different way to play. It's a totally different sport. No one in the fling golf community is trying to convert golfers over to fling golf. We're really trying to tap into the 90% of the people in the world's population that will never step foot on a golf course.
Welcome to Golf Yourself Healthy, the community of golfers who are unified in their belief that golf is good for you. I'm your host, Chris Lynch. Join me and invited guests as we share stories around how golf is helping us to live happy, healthy, and fulfilled lives. If you'd like to join our community, why not follow us on your podcast platform of choice and be notified of new episodes as soon as they drop? And do also check out our back catalogue of journal articles written by myself. They are available at golfyourselfhealthy.com. The website link is available in the show notes. So this week, we're having a fling with golf. Now, for the sake of clarity, I don't mean the kind of fling of the promiscuous sort. Get your minds out the gutter, people. The fling I'm talking about is a wholesome and pure one. It's innovative, it's fun, it's trendy, and it's good for you. Despite what the naysayers may try and tell you, it's golf, just not as you know it. That's right, this week we are throwing ourselves into the world of fling golf, a relatively new sport formed in 2012, a variation on golf, which is enjoying increasing popularity and prominence with around 2,000 golf courses in 35 different countries having now embraced the format. And to talk to us about the growth of the game, we didn't just invite any old fling golfer, did we? We only went and invited world number one fling golfer Austin Ebersole, or Showtime Flings, as he otherwise goes by his moniker. Austin is an all-round lovely guy, a lovely and warm human being who I thoroughly enjoyed talking to and who I can now call a friend. And as ever, with any guest we invite to talk at Golf Yourself Healthy, there are core themes of hope, inspiration, resilience, and embracing adversity throughout. As Austin shares, it's thanks to his underdog and never-say-die attitude which has got him to where he is today. And through his Christian faith, he cares deeply about being of service to others, to his family, to his friends, and inspiring the next generation of not only fling golfers, but also traditional golfers too. So, as indeed Austin's roots and qualifications as a teaching pro are in traditional golf, and to this day he still enjoys swapping the fling stick for 14 golf clubs and hitting the fairways the good old-fashioned way. I hope you feel inspired, educated, and informed after listening to the episode, and who knows, maybe you'll be swapping out the golf clubs for a fling stick once you're done listening. But without any further ado, let's tee off. No, sorry, let's fling off and hurl ourselves into the conversation. Austin, I'd like to welcome you, first of all, to the Golf Yourself Healthy podcast. The Golf Yourself Healthy podcast, which I think, for the purposes of at least this episode, probably needs to be renamed to Fling Golf Yourself Healthy. So, you know, I think that's got a certain ring to it, right? You know,
but anyway. It sounds good. Sounds really good.
It does, right? So FGYH, not just GYH, FGYH.
Fling golf yourself healthy. There, I love that.
There we go. There we go. So checking in first and foremost, how are you feeling today?
Yeah, I'm doing good. It's a nice early morning here. It's only 10:30 actually, so it's not early, but had a little training session this morning with my personal trainer. Feeling pretty good. I actually leave for Western Pennsylvania up near Pittsburgh next week for my tournament. So I'm just kind of in that pre-week routine right now, trying to get ready before I mentally lock in towards the end of the week. But feeling good, man. So thanks for asking. How are you doing today?
Yeah, you know, I'm good. I'm really good. I've been looking forward to this conversation, and I've just got off my Peloton bike. I'm buzzing. That thing gets me in a good headspace all the time.
Good.
And I just had a bath afterwards, which is probably TMI, too much info for the listener.
That's all right.
I'm creating a visual picture for the listener and for you, and I can't undo that now. And I've got a cup of coffee here. So, you know,
all
is well in my world. And it sounds like yours too. On the personal training piece, you know, so I like to do my research on my guests. And there's, I think, another podcast I heard you talk on where you said, anyone who knows you well will know that that's not normally your bag, like, you know, in terms of training and PT stuff, right? So how's that working out for you at the moment? Are you finding you're quite disciplined with it, or is it a bit of a chore or a mission?
Yeah, it's so I started back in November of 23 here. So I've been working out now for 7-8 months. It was really tough to start. I'm not one to go lift weights or do cardio or anything like that. I'm more of the, all right, I love to exercise, but let's go play basketball or let's go walk 18 and carry our clubs. Or so it's never really been about avoiding exercise. It's just the way I'm so competitive. So I need something to shoot for. And it's been fun though. It's been something I've really enjoyed. And, I don't know. I enjoy it now. Sometimes it is like a labor of love where it's like, oh God, I got to go work out today. But like you just said with your Peloton, it's crazy how I feel, how good I feel afterwards. It almost makes the whole day better. So not that I want to work out 7 days out of the week, but maybe I just need to find a way to get active early on in the day. But it's been fun, man.
Yeah, no, that's good. It sounds like I think I'm with you on that. I think wherever I've got like an end goal in sight and something I know, I need a reason for doing that kind of that motivation for doing the training. Because if it sounds like it complements your fling golf, for example, and it's like preparation for what you're going to do, then it helps. Mm-hmm. If I'm hearing you right.
Oh, yeah. It does. Yeah, I'm actually throwing about 20 to 30 yards further than I did last year. And that was really one of the biggest disadvantages that I had over the next, you know, couple top ranked players was they were throwing the ball 200, 210, 215. And I could get there on a dry, windy day, like in summer, when the fairways are dry, but I was really only throwing it about 180 at tops, you know, and now though I'm hitting 205, 207 pretty routinely. And when we were over in the UK for the Britain's Cup, I actually was hitting 235 and 239 a couple times. So it was, I'm happy to see the results are, you know, obviously helping me. It's helping me close that yardage gap. And I like to put my hat on being the best player from 150 yards and in. So if I can stretch that to 200 yards and in, I'm going to be even tougher to beat. So that's the goal.
Oh, yeah. For sure. I love my data and my stats when it comes to anything golf related. And I guess fling golf will be no different to traditional golf in so much as the further out you are, the kind of percentage kind of green in regulation or whatever just tends to shrink a little bit. Yeah. So that's where the marginal gains are, I guess. Right?
Yeah. So I have, it's funny you bring that up because I'm such a stat guy and I'm always looking, recapping my rounds and keeping notes when I play. And Essentially, if I get to the 145 yard mark on my approach shot, my conversion of getting par or better is like 96% if I get to that 145 spot. And it's been crazy. And it's really only over the last two tournaments of this year because it's a different year, different muscles and all that. But looking at the 54 holes I've played, I was like, wow, like every time I got to a hole where I got to that 145 or less approach shot, I was getting pars and birdies. So it's been cool because I think I have a lot more of those this year where last year they might have been 165 or 170. And not that I wasn't getting pars, but definitely not at a 95, 96% clip. So it's been a huge thing. And obviously I've been making putts too. So that helps as well.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. Drive for show, putt for dough, right?
So unless you're Showtime, then it's all about the show, baby.
Yeah. Sorry. I'm not completely on brand there. My bad.
It's okay. You teed that one up. See, we don't use tees, so I'll still let you use the golf reference there.
There we go. Very good. Do you know, I again, building on this whole thing about training, right? Because in an earlier episode of this podcast, I brought a guy who's a golf fitness trainer called Zach Gould. And it's a guy that I'm working with at the moment. And I very openly shared with him. I was like, look, I just struggle with the discipline with this sort of thing. And like, when I hear you and some of his other clients talking about like hitting it further or throwing it further or whatever. It's like, do you find that it's just, you have to just have faith in the process before you actually see the results, or actually the results come fairly quick? Or
yeah, I mean, I think you definitely have to have faith. And I think what you need to do is, whenever you do start to see the results show themselves, I think it's just important to sit back and realize like the hard work that you're putting in is why you're getting to where you're going. And just like in anything in life, it's super easy to, I don't want to say be ungrateful, but it's easy to forget the things that got you to where you're trying to get to. And I think, you know, the whole working out thing is, yeah, you just got to trust the process. You have to understand that it's going to improve. And it's crazy because like you said earlier, again, we'll reference it again, it's almost what it does for your mental state than your actual physical state. And that makes you a lethal weapon when you are training like a lethal weapon. And then you're also like in this mind space where it's like, ah, I know for me, it's like, damn, I bogeyed that hole. Well, what's funny is because I've like learned how to channel this energy more, it doesn't bother me as much. It's easier to move past the bogey all of a sudden, because it's like, you know what? Who cares? Watch what I do on this next hole. And like that, it's been the mental side for me, I actually think, has been the biggest. And I feel stronger putting on some muscle and all that, but it's the mental toughness of trusting the process. I think that's important.
Yeah, and I 100% agree with that. And you know something, you know, going back to the whole Peloton session I just did, like that was just a 20 minutes espresso shot, is like one of my favorite instructors likes to call it, because it's just a short, succinct burst. But but actually, I listened to a podcast with, you know, one of my favorite instructors on there is called Ali Love, and she talked about how essentially with fitness and with exercise, whether it's doing a Peloton class or maybe it's, you know, you doing one of your sessions and training, the key is doing something. It's like consistency and not allowing yourself to fall out of it for too long, because the longer you're absent from it, the longer the whole I can't be asked kind of feeling perpetuates, if you know what I mean. So like I think sometimes, I don't know if you, well, you know, I'm just, this is a personal reflection here, if I feel like I'm very capable of telling myself, oh, do you know what, it's only 20 minutes, that's not even gonna break a sweat, figuratively speaking, what's the point in even doing that? But actually, it's the point is the mental thing.
It's the mental thing.
So it just bursts, it just charges through that mental gray black clouds that I might experience.
No, at some point it totally does. And you know, I went to the PGA show, for an example, kind of talking about the whole like, you don't want to get out of routine, you don't want to get out of your schedule. So luckily for me, my personal trainer is one of my teammates and my sister-in-law, who I run the golf course with, our family business. So I have her at my expense almost all the time. So I'm very lucky and blessed, because like you're saying, same thing. If I didn't have someone to help push me or to stay disciplined, I probably would have tapped out months ago, because it's just, I would have went to my old habits of being like, I'll just supplement my workouts with something else. Maybe I'll go, I don't know, move dirt in the yard, or go build something, or go play basketball, or ride a bike. Right. But the thing is, like, you do have to train. And I'll say this, I went, for an example, I went to the PGA show back in January, and Britt was with me, and we didn't skip any days. We had a gym at our hotel, and it was like the last thing I wanted to do after walking 25,000 steps all day and talking with hundreds of people. But it also was crazy how good it made me feel the whole time. Cause it was like, you know, like, okay, you walked a lot, you talked a lot today, and then you got your butt kicked, you had a good meal, and you went to bed. And it was just crazy how awesome I felt. So, but yeah, I think, man, yeah, it's so true. It's the sticking on the schedule, staying disciplined, and really just trusting it.
For sure. Absolutely. So, you know, amongst all the things I want to talk to you about in this conversation, I'm really looking forward to unpacking Fling Golf more and learning a bit more about it personally, and having my listeners learn more about it too. But let's get to know Austin a bit better. Let's tell us a bit about you as a person.
Yeah. So my name is Austin Ebersole. I am 32 years old. I'm an early 90s baby. So let's go. But I'm a big-hearted, big personality, loving type of guy. Very faithful. I love Jesus. You know, I love our Lord and Savior. I've really grown in my relationship with Him these last couple months. I'm a competitive athlete. I'm a very blessed, lucky man to have such a beautiful daughter and such a smart, lovely wife. So I'm just blessed in many ways, and it's just been awesome. But I'm a fierce competitor. I'm obsessed with this new sport that I've been a part of, and I just want to take it to places that, you know, that I feel that I can take it to. And I hope that while I take this sport on the journey, I'm also able to spread the gospel and lead more people to Jesus. So I'm doing a lot of cool things. But man, it's awesome. I'm very blessed, and I'm happy person. You know, I'm definitely miserable when I miss a par putt, but I'm able to move past that pretty quickly. But I would just say that's me. I'm big hearted, big personality. And, I really just, you know, love to do things, love to try new things and push the envelope.
Yeah, for sure. And we'll definitely get to talking about your faith, something that, you know, I'd love to talk to you about. And what you said there about frustration with a missed par putt, you know, one of our strap lines here at Golf Yourself Healthy, Austin, is embrace the rough, you know. So in every moment of adversity, in every missed par putt, there's a lesson to be learned in there somewhere. Ooh. You know, so it's, you know, sort of embrace it. So, you know, yeah. I'm sure you do. Fling Golf, then. Tell us everything that we need to know in a kind of condensed format about Fling Golf.
Yeah, so Fling Golf is a variation of golf. We play on any golf course. First and foremost, I like to lay that out there. Executive courses, link style courses, country clubs, whatever, par threes. But really, it is one fling stick is all 14 clubs. So we're playing the same golf balls. We're playing the same pars, the same yardages. We're just flinging the ball with one stick instead of hitting it with 14 clubs. So the comparison we use is snowboarding and skiing like they did in the 80s. We're going down the same slopes. We're just doing it a different way. But we still have the same etiquette. We have a much faster pace of play. But the thing is, we're just having fun. And I know, you know, on the outside, on the surface, people are like, man, fling golf is just dumbing down golf. It's an easier way to play. No, it's a totally different way to play. It's a totally different sport. No one in the fling golf community is trying to convert golfers over to fling golf. We're really trying to tap into the 90% of the people in the world's population that will never step foot on a golf course. And that's there's 90% of the people in the world that don't even care to play golf. So that's a huge market. So, but that's what I would leave it at. It is a variation of golf, but it's its own sport. And one fling stick is all you need for the entire round.
That's really cool. Do you know that 90% that you said, I can totally validate that for you. I'm sure you know your stats and you know your stats well, but actually in anticipation of having this conversation with you, I brought up this research report that a company called Ipsos had done in partnership with the PGA, which addresses, I think it's mostly a UK and Ireland report, but it remains, I think, a very global view of essentially the opportunity that you just framed for people to get into all sorts of formats of golf and embrace them, and sort of almost remove this kind of elitist tag that goes with traditional golf and stuff. Right. And actually what it talks about in this report is how, looking at the UK, for instance, right? 4.9 million people in the UK play on course golf, traditional golf, but the potential addressable market, the PAM as they refer to it, is 55.7 million. And that is like the entirety of the UK population. That is, by those numbers, that's 90% of, you know, so I'm, you know, it's, there is a huge opportunity, but
a huge opportunity,
you know, so, So let's unpack this a bit more then, right? So in terms of when was Fling Golf kind of first formally founded then?
Yeah, so Alex Van Allen, I want to say it was 2013. It was a childhood game that he did with his friends. They would take lacrosse sticks and they would hit trees with golf balls. And a lot of cool stuff. So as he got older and made some money, he obviously wanted to bring his childhood game to life. So I believe he started it in 2013. And then they were, you know, he knew that 200 yards was like the spot, like the benchmark that he had to hit. There had to be something that allowed athletes to throw the ball 200 yards, which is crazy to think of throwing something that far, not hitting it, throwing it that far. And so he brought it to life then. And honestly, the biggest breakthrough that I feel is they were at the PGA shows and NGCOA shows and stuff like that, but they were on Shark Tank in 2021. And then that kind of just opened a lot of the doors. ESPN producers saw the sport, they saw the episode, and then we started a tour, and we actually hosted the first tour in Delaware at my home course. And here we are, year three. We're doing international competitions, we're doing skills competitions, and it's been a wild ride. But yeah, I think we're about 10 years of it being formal, but on a professional scene, it's more like 3 years.
Yeah, so let's maybe talk the professional scene then for a moment, because that's where you find yourself. Mm-hmm. And you're not just a player in the professional. You're the number one in the world, right?
Yes.
So, which is really great. I mean, it's the pinnacle, I suppose, for any athlete in their given sport. So, I mean, just kind of talk us through your journey in fling golf then. How were you drawn to it, and what's the journey been like to get to where you are today?
Yeah, so something we talked about last week, where the biggest thing for me is the word that comes to mind is opportunities. And in 2019, I saw an opportunity to bring fling golf to our sport for people to do with their grandkids or their family and friends who maybe, again, they don't like to golf, but they want to spend time together because they're on vacation and all this. So I saw an opportunity to grow my family's business. And then whenever we hosted the first tournament in 2022 with ESPN cameras and all that, I got fourth place in the first tournament, and I didn't practice. I didn't take it serious at all. And I was like, I remember talking with my wife and my mother-in-law, and I'm like, you know, there's an opportunity here because of you know, my personality, my skill set, my determination. I'm like, I think there's something here that I could, you know, do and use my platform for many different ways. And they bought in. They're like, go ahead, let's do it. And then I've just kind of been all in since, man. Like, it's like, you know, I work hard. Like we have all already talked about, I'm personally training. I have the support from my family. It's been awesome. It's been such a wild ride. And I gotta be honest, like, I don't really think often about being the number one player in the world, because I feel like I have to continue to move forward. I don't have time to stop and look in the rearview mirror and be like, oh, that was fun. And I know someday I'll have that opportunity to be like, dude, you pioneered a new sport with many amazing people that you met and great athletes as well. And it's been a wild ride. And I feel like lately I've been thinking about it more, like the international competition was just really, it was just cool. It was really eye-opening to represent the U.S. and come over there and kick your guys' butts. But it was
oh, how gracious of you coming on a British flight.
Look, the food was great. The hospitality was amazing. And if Paul and the team ever listen to this, and I hope they do, I'm very appreciative of everything you guys did. So, but yeah, man, the pro scene was just awesome. It's growing. We've been all around the coast here. In the U.S., we've been San Diego and West Palm Beach and Pittsburgh and Boston and Delaware and Virginia, their state slogan is Virginia is for lovers, but it's really for showtime because I keep winning there. So that'll be that Virginia is my second favorite state.
Amazing. Love it. So question for you, how is the traditional golf scene embracing, or is it embracing fling golf?
Yeah, so it's crazy because this is year five that I've been involved, and I just love that there's content creators on Instagram and TikTok who are very supportive of me. Golf Collective, love you guys. If you ever watch this, I'll be sharing it later. They're embracing it because they're realizing that like it is still golf. I'm still promoting the same golf brands and the same apparel brands and all that. And then like the golf courses, I think because it's been on ESPN and Shark Tank and all these other local sports networks, Facebook and all the socials, like people have heard about Fling Golf now. So it's a lot easier to get onto golf courses, and you don't really have to give the sales pitch much anymore. Especially on the coastlines, you know, the big cities, the New Yorks, the Phillies, the San Diegos, because they've heard about it. They're always up to date on all things happening in the golf world. But yeah, I would say golfers are, you know, you still have your knuckleheads who say stupid things and they put insults, which is what it is. That's just how it is. If you're not getting hate from people, you're probably not doing something. So I feel like that's a positive twist on that. But yeah, it's growing and the community is really embracing it.
You and I have briefly discussed this already, but for the wider benefit of anyone listening to this, you know, because I kind of openly shared to you that myself as a fairly new content creator, because I guess that's what I am as a podcast creator and host and everything, and trying to have a presence in social media, it can be just a bit daunting, like the thought of putting yourself out there and holding yourself up for, you know, it's quite a vulnerable act, actually, yeah. The act of putting yourself out there. But do you find that this, what you're describing is quite an inevitable degree of hate or negativity being thrown your way? Do you use it as motivation sometimes?
Absolutely. There's nothing more satisfying than having people say the stuff that they do on post, but then, like, you know, then I'm sponsored by Callaway and then I get to go play live on ESPN and then I get to travel across the pond to come again, beat your guys' butts on your own home course. So it's kind of one of those things where it's like, I embrace the hate. I'm such a, like I said, I'm so competitive. And when I played baseball growing up, which is my number one sport up until this point, I was a pitcher. So I had that mentality all the time where it was like, I'm not good enough. Not that I'm not good enough. It's people think I'm not good enough. I'm not big enough. I'm not strong enough. I'm not fast enough. And it's been a whole lifetime of like, let me just prove you wrong. And one of the family sayings that my family says is dynamite comes in small packages. And that's something that me, my brother, and my dad live off of. So it is what it is. I just use it as motivation and they can eat their words and I'll just get the last laugh. So
love it. So playing this back to make sure I've heard you right. So, you know, when you first noticed or kind of woke up to this opportunity within Fling Golf, was this do you have a traditional golf background anyway, Austin?
Yeah, so I actually became a certified golf pro in 2017. I did all of my schooling through the United States Golf Teachers Federation, USGTF. I got my World PGA registration as well. So I'm a fully instructional golf pro. I did get down to a 2 handicap at my peak. This was pre-marriage, pre-kid, pre-house, when I had all the time in the world to play. And the truth is, like, I love golf. But again, when I saw an opportunity in a way where I could just be another really good golfer that never makes it anywhere, doesn't get to travel enough, and I just run a golf course, or I could play Fling Golf and be the number one player in the sport and pioneer and do things that way. So, but yeah, I love golf. I'm not bad at it. I probably play at about a 12 to 15 handicap these days. But if you said, hey, Austin, I have an opening on my scramble team next weekend, I would go out and give me like 2 days or 2 driving range sessions just to redial in the woods, really. And I'd be good to go. So the iron play is strong. The putter is phenomenal because I'm still putting all the time in Fling Golf. So right. So I'm probably a better putter short game player now, even in golf, than I was even back then because I'm on the greens all the time. But yeah, I love golf. I think it's a great game. And I love playing alongside golfers when I go to the golf course. And I do think anybody out there that loves golf, like, just know, like, it's okay to play Fling Golf too. Like, it's, you know how many people that have a set of skis also have a snowboard? Like, it's totally fine.
Yeah, yeah, totally. You make me think in what you've just said about, I love the content that you put out, and I encourage any of my listeners to follow you on Instagram, because I think not only will you get to know Austin and his journey and about Fling Golf, but just how you just Like I was saying to you before, this kind of like getting motivation off of maybe some of the hate and the negativity. Like yeah. A couple of my favorite reels that you've done have been what, if I have seen it and read it right, is like channeling your inner Bryson DeChambeau with the whole like working out and the whole like sort of, do you want to describe that one for the listener?
Yeah, yeah. Again, I played off of my Showtime moniker, and DeChambeau did his little post about having fun. And I'm like, you know, like that's really cool because I'm not the biggest guy. So in preparation for the Britain's Cup, I'm like, watch my workout video. And I knew we were going to do very well. So it was easy to be confident in the way of just like, you know, doing some beer curls and you know, taking pictures, raising the stick. So it was just having fun again, showing people that, and you kind of touched on this a little bit earlier where like you have the stuffiness of golf, right? And I think the thing about fling golf that's really appealing is like they're very embracive of people's personalities. And I think in a world where everything is always scrutinized and you're always watched under a microscope, like you might as well just be yourself because there's no point in being fake and there's no point in doing something that's not original to yourself. So that was fun. I love doing that stuff. If anybody has the time and they want to scroll back to the stuff I did in 2022, just know that was a different Austin, but he was definitely having a lot of fun.
So I don't know if I've gone that far back. So tell me, what did Austin look like, who was he like 2 years ago then?
Yeah, the first variation of Showtime was much more of it was Showtime. I was like, all right, let me be entertaining. Let me focus more on the branding part of Showtime Austin Ebersole, and let's do some pictures with like a construction vest on. That's the only thing. And then like Pit Viper sunglasses, where it's like I'm chasing all these big brands and all these fun things. You know, I got my mullet that I'm still wearing for the last 2 years. And so I just did things like that. And like the new Top Gun movie came out, so I would do a little Top Gun theme. And I just focused on the social media aspect of my brand. And it dawned on me halfway through last season that, dude, if you want to continue to be at the top of this thing, you gotta get into shape. You have to focus on the course aspect of it more. But yeah, it's funny. Some people still see me as the 2022 Showtime who was annoying to some people, or you know, they're like, God, he's so full of himself. And then there's this new version today that I hope more people recognize, where it's like I'm still Showtime, but I control it now. There's a time and a place to be a ham, and then there's a time and a place to focus on my game and my health and family and faith and all that. So two totally different people. I feel like I've grown up in the last 2 years.
Yeah. Well, hey, you know, it's there's never a bad time for that necessarily. No. But I think maybe, yeah, because again, when we get to the point where we talk about your faith, I think, you know, I've just got a few things I wanted to ask you around that, and maybe how, I don't know if that ties in with what you just said, but before we get there, you just said something about your mullet. I need to ask you this, right? So I, back in January, tapped out for a sabbatical, a career break from my full-time job, right, in banking, which is in quite a professional environment, where... like I was already starting to grow my hair back in like August, September last year. And it was like generating a few comments like, what's Chris doing? What's going on there?
Yeah, right.
But I don't know what it is, man. But it's dudes in their 60s who like, it's guys who like are always the ones that make comments about long hair.
I know. So I used to have long blonde hair.
Do you get
hair.
This?
Oh yeah. So I used to have long blonde hair that went down my back, and It was long. When I got it cut, I was able to donate it to charity and all that, which was awesome. But it was always the older guys that were just like, you know, like they would make comments about like looking like a girl and, you know, things like that. And I'm just like, dude, like I am like giving off more surfer vibes, like chill, go with the flow than being a girl vibe. So people are just crazy. But it's funny. They don't hate on the mullet, though. I haven't had anybody comment on the mullet. So.
You know, I just find this whole thing really interesting. Like, you know, whether it's comments about guys with long hair, or it's kind of Because going back to this thing that you were saying about kind of getting fuel and motivation from the negativity and the hate, when I get a comment like that, it's like, I'm going to grow it for a month longer than I initially planned. You know what
no,
I mean?
It's that little rebel that we all have in us where it's like, you know, you don't like to be told what to do and you don't. And I think the thing is you can go the other way where like you can actually take offense to things like that and then go cut your hair. But I feel like, again, then you're caving into what I just talked about where like you're not being yourself. Do what you want to do. And if it bugs people, well, like I said, pat yourself on the back because you're doing something right.
For sure. And I thank you for that. I take a lot of motivation and inspiration from that. I mean, another example is, have you come across Rick Shields? He's like...
Sounds familiar, yeah.
Rick Shields is like now, he's global. He's a UK, you know, he started out as like a golf instructor,
coach.
And he's now viral. I mean, he's got a huge, huge following, yeah. And he does a lot of content with like PGA Tour players and stuff like that. But it never ceases to amaze me the amount of comments that I hear, especially older men, like proper dyed in the wool golfers, being like, you know, how is Rick Shields even as, you know, successful as he is? He's a shit golfer and all this sort of stuff. I'm like, okay, you know, it's like, it has total, like, how much do you even lift, bro, vibes to
oh
it, you know?
Oh, my God, so, yeah. No, it's like, dude, you don't have to be a good player to be able to teach good. And, you know, like, what's the saying, like, those that can't do teach? Like, that's something that they say over here in the States. And it's like, yeah, but if you're a great coach, like, I think in most professional sports, some of the best coaches of all times never played at the top level, but they understand the game. And like you look at like the greats like Wayne Gretzky or any of the big soccer players or football players or like Tom Brady and all these Michael Jordan, none of them have like translated to being a good coach. Hell, Michael Jordan's not even a good owner of his basketball team. So, you know, but if aliens invaded the world, I'd still want Michael Jordan out there representing us and playing for our freedom. But you're so right, man. You just is what it is.
Yeah. And I think if I take his example or your example as well, I think what I respect a lot about what you're doing is that you are being authentic and true to yourself, despite all of the noise and people are throwing your way. And why do I respect that so much? Because I think the only way that golf, whether it's fling golf, traditional golf, or any other format of golf, can truly diversify and be more inclusive is where there are, I'm just going to sit like call like bracket us all as like everyday people just putting themselves out there, because that is where the everyday person relates, right? Because when they see, because there is something very, you know, it's quite easy to idolize, you know, your Tiger Woods and your Rory McIlroys of the world and stuff. But I think what's really cool about your story is you've spotted this opportunity and you've gone after it and you've given it every ounce of energy that you have. And like, look where you are now, you know, and it's an inspirational story. Right. And it kind of shows that others can follow in your footsteps, I suppose.
Yeah. I would love for them to. I think, you know, like I just, yeah, they're like, that's the big heart in me where it's like, if I could do anything in my position other than spreading the gospel is just being an inspiration to kids out there who, you know, maybe they're not the biggest, maybe they're not the tallest, they're not the strongest, but they work the hardest and they have foresight into taking advantage of opportunities. And, you know, whether you're from a rich family or a poor family or the color of your skin, it doesn't matter. I just hope that people realize, like, just be you and chase your dreams. And man, if you see a door to an opportunity, kick that damn thing down and just take it and run with it. And it's been awesome. So I hope that's the message that I really portray as my career goes on, is like, hey, look at this guy. Like, he grew up, you know, his dad raised him and his brother. So single parent home and didn't grow up wealthy at all. I mean, not at all. We won't even go there, but it's just been fun. And I just hope to inspire people to chase their dreams.
That's great. Let's talk about your faith then. So you are a man of Christian faith, as am I. And, you know, how, I guess, talk to us about what your faith means to you.
Yeah, I mean, my faith means everything to me. These last couple months, I would even say last couple years, between this Fling Golf thing and being a father to a beautiful 2.5-year-old girl, just a lot of life changes. And I realized, again, last year I was trying to take on the world by myself, and, you know, like, I didn't need anybody. And it really hit me actually at Christmas Eve this past year. And I just was sitting there. We went to a new church for the first time, and I've now gone to the church every Sunday that I'm home. I'm not out on tour. And it's been life-changing. It's been so nice just, you know, trusting the Lord and giving him all of the burdens that I feel, or any of the pressure that I feel of not just being a fling golfer, but of being a husband and being a dad and a homeowner and all these types of things. So it's been, thanks to our Lord, I've been sleeping better. I've been a better father. I've been a better husband. I've been a better fling golfer. I've been a better coworker. So faith just means, it just means everything to me. And I love Jesus. And I can't express enough to people the importance of just trust him. And I wear Proverbs 3:5-6 on my bracelet every day. Trust in the Lord with all your heart and lean not on your own understanding. Acknowledge him in all your ways and he'll make straight your paths. And that's exactly how I feel. And it just, you know, it makes me a little emotional, because even in the middle of a round, if I'm playing bad, all right, dude, you know, like, I trust you. It might not be my day. I know that there's more to life than winning this tournament or making this next shot, but I'm yours, and do with me as you please so we can continue to spread your word.
I love that. And if I may ask, and again, if I'm hearing you right, I always like to play things back to make sure I've got the right understanding. So did you say this was around Christmas time last year then? Was
yeah.
When you,
really? Yeah. Yeah. I've been faithful my whole life. I never really understood or really gave the time to, like, now I read the Bible daily. I'm always reading verses. And so I've always been there. I've always been a believer in Jesus Christ, but I didn't trust him. I didn't give myself to him. I didn't give him my soul. And it just hit me, you know, Christmas Eve and like continuing to go to the church. And I got baptized back on April 7th. And it's funny because, like, I've always wanted to get baptized ever since I was a little kid, but I never wanted to do it until I understood why I was doing it. And that day was so special for me. It was awesome. You know, I know that there's going to be other battles, because the devil will continuously try to tear down, especially those that love the Lord and follow him. But I'm ready for that battle, because I'm fighting battles all the time. So it's nothing I'm not used to. But yeah, it's been relatively new, though, my big, you know, belief and really just trusting him.
Mm. And you talk about your why there. You know, what is that? What is your why then?
I just, like I said, the big reason why was just my whole life just carrying the burdens, carrying hate in my heart, like, you know, like upset, like, why did my mom leave my dad? Why did she move further and further away? Why did she not, you know, want to be a part of anything in my life? And then she's been a lot better lately. But, you know, you think of all those childhood trauma, you think of stuff like that. And so you carry hatred. And then, again, I'm always told, you know, like, I'm too small. Like, when I was playing varsity baseball, like, I didn't throw hard enough. I didn't hit far enough. I was too slow. So it's continuously never being good enough, or at least feeling that way. So it just hit me, like, okay, dude, like, you've broken those things. Like, let them go, man. Like, let them go. And instead of trying to fight the world by yourself, fight with the Lord. Let him fight your fight for you and just trust him. And I can't. You know, we could go even deeper into it, and I'm all for sharing everything, but it's just like the why is it's just the right way to go. It's the easier yet harder in some ways path, just because everything's always, you know, everyone's judgy and things, people want to say what they are, and everyone that is very Christian based and very faithful and many religions, actually, whatever, you know, they're always like, they just force it down your throat. I'm not here to force it down anyone's throat. I'm just saying the thing for me is it's a lot better on this side, and you do so many better things in life when you're not trying to fight the world. So that's my why.
Thanks for sharing it, Austin. I really appreciate it. I think, you know, the stuff that I've got left to cover with you are some kind of preset segments that I have.
Okay.
And we're getting into some of my really favorite territory in the Golf Yourself Healthy podcast here, right?
Okay.
So, and this one is what I like to call Golf Yourself Nostalgic. Okay. For me personally, I love the feeling of nostalgia. I love the warm, fuzzy feeling that you get when you look back on a time in your life that has golf, it's in a golf setting, for example. You know, and it may be you playing in a certain location. It may be winning a certain tournament. It may be just actually being in the company of certain people. And just every time that you reflect back on that time, it's nostalgia, right?
Right.
So what golfing memory, whether fling golf, traditional golf, whatever, have you got that kind of evokes that warm, fuzzy, nostalgic feeling for you?
So there's almost two situations. Because of my golf and fling golf, there's two things that always makes me love, you know, give that warm, fuzzy feeling. For the golf side, it's so funny because when I was a golf pro, we used to run golf kids camps all summer long. We would do these week-long camps. I shouldn't say all summer, but we would do a really long week one in June. And leading up to it, I always dreaded it. I was like, man, this is, you know, I'm pretty much babysitting people's kids for 4 hours each day. And it was dreadful. But it's funny because when I look back on it now and I talk to the people that volunteered and helped me, and Britt and Brooke, we have so many great memories of just of teaching kids how to play golf and the etiquette and why it's a great game and all that. So on the golf side, it's not being a certified pro and playing all these amazing courses. It was again giving back and being able to get kids to just love the game, and now they come, now they're all driving cars to the golf course to play, and it makes me feel old. but it's that nostalgia feeling. Every time I see one of the kids that are now 16, 17, and to me they're still 8 years old, and it's that nostalgia feeling, like, oh my gosh, like, and then we'll just start talking about that kid at camp and how much fun we had with them and the biggest thing they accomplished. So I would say that's the biggest thing on the golf side. And then the fling golf is, man, I've won 4 individual championships. I can't say that any of them are particularly my favorite. I will say probably winning Florida this year, 5 days after doing my baptism, and really just seeing right away that it was like, wow, dude, like, you are a weapon now because you're just in such a better mind space. And so thinking back to just, you know, even just this past year, just the fact that I just think back to April and I was resilient and I didn't give up and nothing fazed me. And even if I had a bad shot, I was just like, all right, dude, like, you got me, give me the power here to fight through this. And so that's, I would have to say that on the fling golf side, it's so short. It's only been a couple months, but I take a lot of joy in what I was able to accomplish personally and competitively in Florida.
The next one I'm going to ask you is called The Eagle Has Landed. Now, you don't have to tell me. You love it.
I love it.
Now, this does not need to be you telling us a story where you got an eagle. It can be, if you want it to be.
Oh, I got a good one.
I tell you, I've done about 12 episodes so far, and I've had only one person tell me about an eagle story. And I think that's because it's mostly hackers and average golfers that come on here who can't get eagles. But the whole essence of this is like just a, yes, I did it. Awesome shot. I'm so proud of it. I just, you get me?
Yeah.
So what's your eagle has landed moment?
So I had an eagle in the Britain's Cup this past year. The first day of competition, par 5, I'm about 120 yards out. It's on hole 15. So we only needed to win one more hole to take the match. and I dunked the damn thing, and it was just epic. It was like, holy crap, we're done. And then everyone on the team's like, well, the captain just ended his match on a 120-yard eagle from the middle of the fairway. And I think it just kind of gave everybody energy, like, all right, let's go. Like, let's keep playing. So that was a huge shot. And then, again, another eagle moment for me was, if anyone wants to watch my clip of me winning in Florida, like, nailing that final putt. It was only a 3-inch tap in because I missed the putt before it. But thankfully, I had a couple stroke lead. It wasn't a Rory situation. So just striving to be a better person. And it just, again, leaning into my face. So that was another eagle moment too. So again, you have the actual shot of the eagle in the Britain's Cup to close out my match. And then that moment of sinking that putt.
You're good.
All thanks to God right in that moment was very special.
That is clutch, as they like to say in the industry. And you clearly are Showtime. I mean, you live for the big moments, right?
I love it. I love the cameras. I love entertaining and again, just, you know, trying to be the total package. Not everybody thinks I am, but I think I am. I'm going to keep trying to make things happen.
So we'll round this thing out on Cut It Out. This is my final segment. So, like, if you could just cut anything out of golf that just grinds your gears, what would it be?
Oh, man. Like, people's long routines. like 7 practice swings, and then, like, then they biff it. Like, it's I wish there was a way that people... Because it all comes to pace of play, especially playing fling golf. It's a lot faster. So I have a lot of time of watching people really struggle. And part of me wants to go help them coach because I'm certified to do it. But I just feel like you gotta just hit the ball. You use the driving range and the warm-up time to do all the thinking. And it's crazy because I think we all know that the less thinking you do when you're playing, you tend to play better anyways. Or as soon as you don't care... It's funny how you start stringing pars together then. So I would love to remove people's – I would love to remove practice swings, I guess is what I'm saying. But I would – you know, I think the image, the stuffiness too from some people that, like, for my situation, like, we're not wasting our time playing fling golf. So I'd like to remove this idea that, like, if you're on a golf course, you should be golfing. Like, no, you can play fling golf and you can play anything else that is ever created that allows golf companies, golf courses to make money so that they can stay open. So I would, those two little things like that.
Nice. I like it. The whole multiple practice swings one has come up on this podcast before. And, you know, I think I almost wonder if it's less of a someone taking their golf overly seriously when objectively they're probably just an average club golfer who is, you know, they're not going to shoot the lights out sort of thing. Or maybe is it more just like you said, like it needs to be coached out of them. Maybe it's like an insecurity or like a kind of a mental block or something.
Yeah. I think they're tense. They're probably really excited to be there. They just spent a lot of money to play because it's not a cheap game. So obviously they're trying to set personal records every time they step out in the course, and it just makes people tense. So yeah, I would, you know, and honestly, like the more I'm thinking about it, like that's not the worst thing, but it drives me nuts. But I can't stand the people that hit 2, 3, 4 balls either. They like, You got to play the ball you hit, whether you hit a worm burner or not. Like, you're not going to get better until you learn how to get out of those situations and then you don't do it again. Just dropping a second ball and a third ball when you have people behind you on the tee, it's just such bad etiquette. It's just like the world doesn't revolve around you, guy. Like, keep moving. Like, yeah, we all paid the same rate to play here. So, but you're right. I think people just care. They want to do well. They use their hard-earned money, so they're probably a little tense and a little too locked in.
Yeah. I hear you. I've got more perspective that I can probably offer and share and some experience on this one. And I think We'll probably round it out there, and then you and I can have this, you know, we can go off air now, really let rip on what we think about the, or I will anyway, you know. So, anyway, I'm conscious we've gone on for almost an hour, and I just want to thank you very much, Austin, for, you know, just coming on, giving your time so graciously, sharing you, your story, your life story, and your experiences in Flynn Golf, and hopefully, I think one of maybe the best outcomes that could come out of this episode is that people out there who either hadn't heard of Flynn Golf or were on the fence about it, just go out and give it a try. So,
yeah, no, thank you. Thank you for having me. When you reached out and shot me a message, I was excited. I love doing podcasts. And it really comes down to just, I know that it brings awareness to the sport that I love. And with you being so open to talking about my faith as well and my health and everything that revolves around, you know, the whole thing that you're doing, Golf Yourself Happy, Healthy, is just awesome. And I'm just very appreciative of you asking me to be on here. And yeah, I hope everyone out there that sees my stuff and sees this podcast, like, give it a try. It's fun. And if you have any questions, don't hesitate to reach out.
Love it. Take care, Austin.
Awesome. You too, Chris.
I hope you enjoyed today's episode. Do remember to follow us on your podcast platform of choice. And if you would like to get in touch with the show, you can email me. My email address is in the show notes. Or alternatively, if you listen on Spotify, for example, you can use the comments feature to drop a few words about what you liked about this episode or what you like about the show, or indeed any feedback or ideas for future episodes. But until the next time, remember to always embrace the rough and forever cherish the fairway.